Carrying on the wars we fight, griping about the great things on the beat. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fog that I keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight beside me. Some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe the fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fog that I keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my country, man. You walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you run down my country, man. You walking on the fight beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you may be listening this morning in the European heartland. I was in a small cafe in the city I live in southern Ontario, in Hamilton, the other day, and I was having a coffee and a cookie, and so my back was turned to the several of the staff in that cafe, and you know, sometimes your ears pick up things that but it's interesting, not to look, but just to hear. And I could hear these two, you just know the tone, the lisp, kind of lispy, not obviously so, not quite masculine voices, coming from two men. I'd seen the two men on my way in. They were staff there, I guess. And there was something creepy. About that wasn't anything exactly they said, but it was just creepy. And then at one point, I heard one of the males say, "Oh, and I'm going to meet my husband after, you know, after work," or something to that effect. And I thought, how utterly destitute and just creepy this is, you know, this same-sex marriage business. I don't have a problem if two people want to live together. And you know, even if they make an arrangement where, you know, one will do the laundry and the other will do the cooking or whatever the arrangement might be, but it's not a marriage, and that's what I find is important. Well, talk about catering to minorities. I mean, it's enough to make you sick. Now there is a product. Called it's a tonic called Floridex, and it's sort of, I believe it's an iron supplement. And it comes from Germany, and it's put out by a German company called Salus, founded in 1916 by Dr. Otto Greither. And so there's a lot about this and other products they have. It's a flyer that comes with the bottle of Floridex. And taking up a good deal of this flyer is kosher information about Floridex. After preparing and combining the herbal extracts, at the end of the process, that goes into all the stuff which I needn't tell you about. And near the end it says, it was actually all signed by a rabbi in Jerusalem. There are no concerns regarding this product, which contains grape skins or seeds, which have been dried out and turned into powder. And they quote some of the, Talmud scriptures. May God speedily send recovery and healing to all those who sent it, to all those who need it. I wonder, this is for a religion that constitutes a little under 1% of the population of Canada, which is, I suppose, where this is aimed to be marketed. And the endless catering, our society is absolutely sick catering to minorities. Well, one of the big news items that was hard to avoid occurred on Thursday, and it's quite controversial. It was the decision by the Ecuadorian embassy to in Washington to withdraw its protection to Julian Assange, and he was then arrested. So I'm going to read a couple of commentaries on that. He was, of course, a major whistleblower. He's an Australian-born, and he blew the whistle through WikiLeaks on some real scandals. And, of course, governments don't like whistleblowers because, well, usually they're revealing some of the shenanigans that go on in government. So here's a commentary called The Martyrdom of Julian Assange. I share this as an interesting opinion, hope you like it. This is the opinion of a website called Truth Dig, that's digging behind the, or it bills itself as digging behind the headlines. And it's the this particular editorial is written by Chris Hedges. Chris is a Truth Dig columnist and Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, a New York Times best-selling author, a professor of in the college degree program offered at New Jersey State Prisoners for New Jersey State Prisoners by Rutgers University. And Chris Hedges writes, "The arrest Thursday of Julian Assange eviscerates all pretense of the rule of law and the rights of a free press. The illegalities embraced by the Ecuadorian, British, and U.S. governments in the seizure of Assange are ominous. They presage a world where the internal workings, abuses, corruptions, lies, and crimes, especially war crimes, carried out by corporate states and the global ruling elite will be masked from the public." And of course, that's what they fear, that, as long as they can do bad things, persecute people in more or less secret, well, they will, won't they? These events presage a world where those with the courage and integrity to expose the misuse of power will be hunted down, tortured, subjected to sham trials, and given lifetime prison terms in solitary confinement. They presage an Orwellian dystopia where news is replaced with propaganda, trivia, and entertainment. The arrest of Assange, I fear, marks the official beginning of the corporate totalitarianism which will define our lives. Now, that's a pretty strong statement, but you know, certainly what he says about most of today's news media is true. It's propaganda, trivia, and entertainment. Especially the news media, it really isn't news. It's, for the most part, soap opera. And like any good soap opera, has readily identifiable, you know, quote, good guys and readily identifiable bad guys, you know, good girls and bad girls as well. And it just so happens that in the hands of the largely globalist or minority who control most of our media, it will always happen to be that the populists, like ourselves, freedom lovers, will be, yeah, you guessed it, no, not the good guys, the bad guys. Anyway, back to Chris Hedges' commentary. Under what law did Ecuadorian President Lenin, interesting name, Lenin, as in Vladimir, Moreno, capriciously terminate Julian Assange's right of asylum as a political refugee? Under what law did Moreno authorize British police to enter the Ecuadorian embassy, sanctioned sovereign territory, to arrest a naturalized citizen of Ecuador? Under what law did Prime Minister Theresa May order the British police to grab Assange, who has never committed a crime? Under what law did President Donald Trump demand the extradition of Assange, who is not a U.S. citizen and whose news organization is not based in the United States? And that's real, you know, extraterritoriality. I'm sure the government attorneys are skillfully doing what has become de rigueur for the corporate state, using specious legal arguments to eviscerate enshrined rights by judicial fiat. This is how we have the right to privacy with no privacy. This is how we have free elections funded by corporate money, covered by a compliant corporate media, and under iron corporate control. This is how we have a legislative process in which corporate lobbyists write the legislation and corporate indentured politicians vote it into law. This is how we have the right to due process with no due process. Or, in the free speech front, we're assured the right to free speech, but not hate speech. We don't have free speech. This is how, back to the commentary by Chris Hedges. This is how we have a government whose fundamental responsibility is to protect citizens that orders and carries out the assassination of its own citizens, such as radical Qari Anwar al-Awlaki and his 16-year-old son. This is how we have a press legally permitted to publish classified information and a publisher sitting in jail in Britain awaiting the extradition to the United States and a whistleblower, Chelsea Manning, in a jail cell in the United States. Britain will use its legal cover for the arrest, the extradition request from the Washington-based government on conspiracy charges. This legal argument in a functioning judiciary will be thrown out of court. Unfortunately, we no longer have a functioning judiciary. We will soon know if Britain as well lacks one. Almost certainly it does. Its judiciary is absolutely rotten. Assange was granted asylum in the embassy in 2012 to avoid extradition to Sweden to answer questions about sexual offense allegations that were eventually dropped. Assange and his lawyers always argued that if he was put in Swedish custody, he'd be extradited to the United States. Once he was granted asylum and Ecuadorian citizenship, the British government refused to grant Assange safe passage to the London airport, trapping him in the embassy for 7 years as his health steadily deteriorated. And certainly television pictures of Assange being dragged out of the embassy did not suggest a man in good health. The Trump administration will seek to try Assange on charges that he conspired with Chelsea Manning in 2010 to steal the Iraq and Afghanistan war logs obtained by WikiLeaks. The half a million internal documents leaked by Manning from the Pentagon and the State Department, along with the 2007 video of U.S. helicopter pilots nonchalantly gunning down Iraqi civilians, including children, and two Reuters reporters, provided copious evidence of the hypocrisy, indiscriminate violence, and routine use of torture, lies, bribery, and crude tactics of intimidation by the U.S. government in its foreign relations and wars in the Middle East. Yes, wars for Israel, which have cost America a fortune, and done nothing to better the lives in the Middle East, and of course, cost a lot of American lives, to say nothing of hundreds of thousands of people in the Middle East. Just a disaster. And back to Chris Hedges' commentary. Assange and WikiLeaks allowed us to see the inner workings of empire, the most important role of a press, and for this they became the empire's prey. And the interesting thing is, nobody ever said, well, but that's not true. What they did, I mean, so what they revealed was false or lies. No, just they shouldn't have revealed it. But why not? U.S. government lawyers will attempt to separate WikiLeaks and Assange from the New York Times and the British newspaper The Guardian, both of which also published the leaked material for Manning. So, if establishment papers do it, well, okay, but if you're not establishment, I mean, he could go to jail for a very, very, very long time. And they're going to do that by implicating Assange in the theft of the documents. Manning was repeatedly and often brutally pressured during her detention and trial to implicate Assange in the seizure of the material, something she steadfastly refused to do. She's currently in jail because of her refusal to testify without her lawyer in front of the grand jury assembled for the Assange case. President Barack Obama granted Manning, who was given a 35-year-old sentence, clemency after she served 7 years in prison, in a military prison. Once the documents and videos provided by Manning to Assange and WikiLeaks were published and disseminated by news organizations such as the New York Times and the Guardian in Britain, the press callously and foolishly turned on Assange. News organizations that had run WikiLeaks material over several days soon served as conduits in a black propaganda campaign to discredit Assange and WikiLeaks. This coordinated smear campaign was detailed in the leaked Pentagon document prepared by the Cyber Counterintelligence Assessment Branch and dated March 8, 2008. The document called on the U.S. to eradicate the feeling of trust that is WikiLeaks' center of gravity and destroy Assange's reputation. So it was not to tell the truth, but to simply try to destroy a whistleblower. Assange, who with the Manning leaks, had exposed the war crimes, lies, and criminal manipulations of the George W. Bush administration, soon earned the ire of the Democratic Party establishment by publishing 70,000 hacked emails belonging to the Democratic National Committee and senior Democratic officials. The emails were copied from the accounts of John Podesta, Hillary Clinton's campaign manager. The Podesta emails exposed the donation of millions of dollars from Saudi Arabia and Qatar, two of the major funders of the Islamic State, to the Clinton Foundation. You know, the amazing interlocking connections of people who are supposed to be, you know, enemies. Americans, even the Democrats and Clinton were supposed to be, enemies of the Islamic State. But one of the major funders, Saudi Arabia and the oil-rich Gulf state of Qatar, were major donors to the Clinton Foundation. The WikiLeaks exposed the $657,000 that Goldman Sachs paid to Hillary Clinton to give talks, a sum so large it could only be considered a bribe. I mean, she's not a particularly engaging speaker. Her lectures were, not particularly revealing or informative. This was simply a way to funnel a lot of money to her. I mean, $657,000 for a series of lectures. Come on. Nobody's worth that. but it provides a good cover to give her money. It exposed Clinton's repeated mendacity. She was caught in the emails, for example, telling the financial elites that she wanted to open trade and open borders, and believed Wall Street executives were best positioned to manage the economy, a statement that contradicted her campaign statements. You see, WikiLeaks has actually helped shine a light on some of the sordid behind-the-scenes machinations in American politics. And that's a public benefit. An ignorant public is not a safe public. An informed public, though, may be unsafe or may make things unsafe for certain elements of a largely corrupt elite. It exposed the Clinton campaign efforts to influence the Republican primaries to ensure that Trump was a Republican nominee. It exposed Clinton's advanced knowledge of questions in a primary debate. You know, she cheated. It exposed Clinton as the primary architect of the war in Libya, a war she believed would burnish her credentials as a presidential candidate. Journalists can argue that this information, like the war log, should have remained hidden, but they can't then call themselves journalists. And some of that information is very important. that war against Libya in 2011 has had catastrophic effects on the West. For one thing, it demolished a relatively stable regime under the longtime president of Libya, Muammar Gaddafi, who may have been eccentric, but he provided stability. This was an effort to overthrow him, some say, because he refused to go along with the fractional reserve international banking scheme, some because he was a major opponent of Israel. So this is part of the war funded by the United States, implemented in part by the United States, to take out Israel's enemies. And sometimes it's said, and it's perhaps a bit vulgar, but big Zionist money bribing politicians has essentially made America Israel's bitch. And the war against Libya has had catastrophic effects. For one thing, instead of a relatively stable government, Libya is now in chaos. Actually, there's large parts of Libya that are under ISIS or Al-Qaeda control, or loosely under their control. There's one faction in the east of Libya and another faction in the west of Libya. The instability has allowed huge amounts of Libyan weaponry to go into the hands of terrorists who are destabilizing states to the south of Libya, and perhaps worst of all from the point of view of Europe, it has allowed millions of Africans to move through Libya and hit the beaches and work with people smugglers and gangsters to continue the invasion of Europe. And Gaddafi warned the West over a decade ago, if I go, or putting it slightly differently, one of the few things between you and an invasion from Africa is me. Gaddafi did not allow his shoreline to be used for flotillas of boats to head to Europe. So what did the globalists do, and which included Britain, the United States, Italy, France, and Canada? We even contributed a few planes to the assault on Libya, or the assault on Gaddafi. What did we do? Well, we got rid of the man who, in a sense, was protecting Europe's southern flank. What good would that do? Well, it wouldn't do any good. In fact, it did huge harm. However, if your long-range goal is to basically replace the indigenous European people, well, this is an important step along the way. And it's interesting that at least what WikiLeaks exposed was Hillary Clinton did this to, or participated in this, in a way to look tough. as a prelude to running for the presidency. So American lives, to say nothing of many Libyan lives, and European security sacrificed for the basis of short-term political goals. I mean, she is truly an evil person. The Democratic leadership, intent on blaming Russia for its election loss, yeah, so the Russians caused the Democrats to lose the election. No, stupid policies, poor campaigning, and a candidate, Donald Trump, who resonated with a lot of abandoned, forgotten white voters. That's why they lost the election. Nothing too mysterious about that, but Democratic leadership intent on blaming, this is back to Chris Hedges' commentary, Democratic leadership intent on blaming Russia for its election loss, charges that the Podesta emails were obtained by the Russian government hackers, although James Comey, the former FBI director, has conceded that the emails were probably delivered to WikiLeaks by an intermediary. Assange has said the emails were not provided by state actors, or in other words, Russian or any other state intelligence operation. WikiLeaks has done more to expose the abuse of power and crimes of the American empire than any other news organization. In addition to the war logs and the Podesta emails, it made public the hacking tools used by the CIA and the National Security Agency and their interference in foreign elections, including the French elections. I mean, isn't that interesting? For all the yapping and carrying on about alleged Russian interference in the last American election, it was obvious that America has been meddling in other countries' elections. It disclosed the internal conspiracy against British Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn by Labour members of Parliament. It intervened to save Edward Snowden, who made public the wholesale surveillance of the American public by our intelligence agencies, from saved him from extradition to the United States by helping him flee from Hong Kong to Moscow. The Snowden leaks also revealed that Assange was on a U.S. manhunt target list. Even though he's not an American citizen, he's Australian. A haggard-looking Assange, as he was dragged out of the embassy by British police, shook his finger and shouted, "The UK must resist this attempt by the Trump administration. The UK must resist. We all must resist. We must, in every way possible, put pressure on the British government to halt the judicial lynching of Julian Assange. If Assange is extradited and tried, it will create a legal precedent that will terminate the ability of the press, which Trump repeatedly has called the enemy of the people, to hold power accountable. The crimes of war and finance, the persecution of dissidents, minorities, the pillaging of the corporations of the nation and the ecosystem, and the ruthless impoverishment of working men and women to swell the bank accounts of the oligarchs, of the global oligarchs, and to advance their grip on power will not only expand but will no longer be part of public debate. First Assange, writes Chris Hedges, and then us. An interesting commentary, and I pass it on as such. I might agree with a lot of it, and I might not agree with some of it. Donald Trump is nothing if not unpredictable. And you know, I think in many ways that's a good thing. I'm hoping, given his animosity to some of the sinister elements in the American intelligence community, which have actively worked against him and to undermine him, given that, and also given his cynicism about the press, that he may withdraw. I hope he will withdraw the American request for Assange's extradition. We need more, not less, truth in dealing with governments, and we need more facts, more exposés, not fewer. We can't be sure how this will turn out, but I'm certainly hoping that will turn out thus. I am having a little bit of problems with my feed here, so I'm going to go to a musical break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with with further items. This is Paul Brown, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. We're going to play a couple of tunes by Merle Haggard, and this one it really celebrates the family values and the good, basic, decent American instincts that Merle Haggard so celebrated in his music, in his songwriting, in his performances. And this is called Daddy Frank. Daddy Frank, the guitar man, was blind, about a family dealing with adversity.
Daddy Frank played the guitar in the French horn. Sister played the ringing tambourine. Mom couldn't hear our pretty music. She read our lips and helped the band sing. That little band was all a part of living, and our only means of living at the time. And it wasn't like no normal band combo, 'cause Daddy Frank, the guitar man, was blind. Frank and Mom counted on each other. Their one and only weakness made them strong. Hey, Mama did the driving for the family, and Frank made a living with a song. Home was just a camp along the highway. A pickup bed was where it bedded down. Don't ever once remember going hungry. I remember Mom cooking on the ground. Daddy Frank played the guitar and the French horn. Sister played the ringing tambourine. Mom couldn't hear our pretty music. She read our lips and helped the family sing. That little band was all part of living, and our only means of living at the time. And it wasn't like no normal family combo. Oh, Daddy Frank, the guitar man, was blind. Don't remember how they got acquainted. I can't recall just how it came to be. But there had to be some special help from someone. And blessed be the one who let it be. Fever caused my mama's loss of hearing. Daddy Frank was born without his sight. And Mama needed someone she could lean on. I believe the guitar man was right. Daddy Frank played the guitar in the French horn. Sister played the ringing tambourine. Mama couldn't hear our pretty music. She read our lips and helped the band to sing. That little band was all part of the living, and our own means of living at the time. And it wasn't like no normal family combo. Oh, Daddy Frank, the guitar man, was blind. Be holding you tonight. Could quit doing wrong, start doing right. You don't care about what I think. I think I'll just stay here and drink. Hey, putting you down don't square no deal. At least you know. Take all the money in the bank. Think gonna just stay here and drink. Listen close and you can hear that night jukebox playing in my ear. And a woman gonna change the way I think I just stay here and drink. Me now don't mean a thing. Since love ain't here, don't feel no pain. My mind ain't nothing but a total blank. I think I'd just stay here and dream.
That's Merle Haggard. I think we're back in business now. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. I'm going to play a commentary here by Tucker Carlson, and hope you like this. This is a recent commentary he put out, and he's always an interesting commentator on the present scene, and have unfortunately, I think, just seem to have lost this. But we will certainly try to get that for you. Very, very, very soon. The Julian Assange case is really, yeah, here we are. Tucker Carlson and people are mad at Assange. Let's see what Tucker has to say here.
Well, if you watched a lot of the coverage of this story today on television, you likely came away with the understanding that Julian Assange is some kind of Russian spy who's in trouble tonight because he stole classified documents from the U.S. government. That is not true. It's factually incorrect. Saying so is not a defense of Assange. We're not here to promote him or excuse any number of things he said over the years that we disagree with quite a lot. But just so it's clear, whatever his sins, Assange did not steal documents from the United States government. He did not hack the DNC servers. He didn't break into John Podesta's Gmail account. There is no proof that he is working for the Russian government or ever has worked for the Russian government. Assange has never been charged with any of that and wasn't today, no matter what they tell you. If you're upset about the theft of classified documents from the U.S. government, and there is reason to be, we already know who did that, a 22-year-old Army private named Bradley Manning, now called Chelsea Manning. In 2013, Manning pleaded guilty to stealing secret material and got 35 years in prison for it. Shortly after that, Barack Obama commuted Manning's sentence. This allowed Manning to leave jail decades early, go back on television as a commentator, and then run for political office. So if your real concern is America's national security, you have someone to be angry at, Barack Obama. And yet, strangely, nobody is. Instead, they're furious at Julian Assange for printing the documents that other people stole. Quote, Julian Assange has long been a wicked tool of Vladimir Putin and the Russian intelligence services, wrote professional moralizer Ben Sasse, who also serves in the U.S. Senate. He deserves to spend the rest of his life in prison. Wicked? The rest of his life in prison? Idi Amin ate people and never faced this kind of scorn. Not even close. Nor, for the record, was Amin ever extradited. He died at 78 years old in his own bed, leaving behind 43 loving children. So what's going on here? A couple of things. First, Julian Assange embarrassed virtually everyone in power in Washington. He published documents that undermined the official story on the Iraq War and Afghanistan. He got Debbie Wasserman Schultz fired from the DNC. He humiliated Hillary Clinton by showing that the Democratic primaries were, in fact, rigged. Pretty much everyone in Washington has reason to hate Julian Assange. Rather than just admit that straightforwardly, he made us look like buffoons, so now we're sending him to prison. Instead, they're denouncing him as, you guessed it, a Russian agent. Watch Senator Richard Blumenthal explain.
Justice should come to Julian Assange for his role in Russian meddling in our election, and the sooner the better.
Okay, so once again, just to be totally clear, no one has ever shown that Julian Assange is a Russian agent. The indictment against him today does not say that. It doesn't mention Russia at all. But that has not stopped virtually every politician in Washington from repeating Senator Blumenthal's line, including many Republicans. Robert Mueller nearly killed the Russia collusion hoax. Julian Assange is allowing them to keep it alive. You'd think journalists would say something about this. Assange is, after all, one of them. What do you call a man who publishes news for a living? Assange is no sleazier than many journalists in Washington. He's definitely not more anti-American. He's broken stories the New York Times would have won Pulitzers for. And yet many of his colleagues have disowned him. Oh, please, wrote Alexia Campbell of Vox. The same Assange is no journalist. We know who he works for, meaning Russia. Julian Assange is not a journalist, explained Jelani Cobb of The New Yorker without actually explaining. Kendall Anian of NBC, who doesn't so much cover the national security state as write memos on its behalf, noted that, quote, many believe that if Assange ever was a journalist, those days ended a long time ago. At NBC, when they tell you many believe something, it means they believe it. So why all the hostility to Julian Assange? Well, we'll let former Democratic staffer and current CNN anchor Jim Sciutto explain. Assange's real sin was preventing Hillary Clinton from becoming president.
He is central to several cases. He's central to Russian interference in the election. U.S. intelligence views him as a middleman, a cutout, that he was, in effect, part of this interference. He's central, too, to questions about what the Trump administration, or Trump campaign, I should say, knew prior to the release of those materials, right? What were the communications between Roger Stone, etc.? It's possible that this is something President Trump himself is not particularly excited about.
It's remarkable to watch this. It's bewildering, actually. There was a time not so long ago, really, when reporters didn't applaud the arrest of other journalists for publishing information. In 1971, the Washington Post and the New York Times published a trove of stolen classified documents about the Vietnam War. It was called the Pentagon Papers. Remember that? Liberals loved it. Books were written celebrating their bravery. As recently as 2011, the Washington Post saw the connection. Quote, a conviction of Julian Assange would also cause collateral damage to American media freedoms, a Post op-ed said that year. Quote, it is difficult to distinguish Assange or WikiLeaks from the Washington Post. And that's true. But that was before the Trump election and the total war that followed, a war in which the media have definitively chosen a side. Press freedom? Sure. as long as we agree with your politics. The First Amendment, well, that all depends. Who'd you vote for? The guardians of speech are now the enemies of speech. The people charged with policing power are now colluding with power. There's a reason you see John Brennan on NBC all the time. They're all on the same team now. We're not saying any of this to defend Julian Assange. We just want to be absolutely clear about who hurts this country more, and it's not him.
That's a very interesting commentary by Tucker Carlson. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I'm going to go back to my musical interlude and have a song here by Pam Tillis. She, of course, is the daughter of now deceased country and western singer Mel Tillis. And Pam Tillis is singing here, "Don't Tell Me What to Do." Another Pam Tillis song, My Crazy Life, or Mi Vida Loca.
Yeah, si tengo suerte, quizás. It's just a flat. Yeah, they'll have it fixed in no time, and I'll be home soon. Okay, I love you too. Don't worry about me. It's just Mi Vida Loca. Bye. If you come over me, you need nerves of steel.
We will go away.
Jealous, Mi Vida Loca. Here's another popular female singer from the 1980s, Lacey J. Dalton, Pennsylvania born, horsewoman singer.
There've been times in my life when I felt out of touch and half crazy. Lost in a crowd with lovers and friends by my side. There's a numbness I've known all alone in some shimmering city. With bright lights around me, nothing but shadows inside. There've been desperate times when my heart was so dry that I felt like my life was a curse. I was standing knee-deep in the river and dying in a thirst. There are months at a time when no reason, no rhyme can sustain me. Nothing makes sense and everything turns upside down. There are nights when I fight to keep dreaming from driving me crazy. And I shut off my mind just to keep it from spinning around. Down in that quiet, in that stillness, I find the sweet waters for which I long searched. While standing knee-deep in the river and dying in a thirst. So if you're having times when you feel out of touch and half crazy, lost in a crowd, lovers and friends by your side. If the game's getting old and you're cold and exhausted, maybe you just like to cut back and crumble or lay down and die. If you come to a time when you need to decide, friend, you might want to ask yourself first. Am I standing knee-deep in the river and dying of thirst? There's a great river runs from the heart of the sun, the soul of the whole universe. From the limitless light that brings order and might to the substance of heaven and earth. And it's down in that quiet, in that stillness inside, there's a well we don't see till we hurt. Standing knee-deep in the river and dying in thirst. Yes, down in that quiet, in that stillness inside, waters to heal this world. That is standing deep in the river. Standing knee-deep in the river. We're all standing knee-deep in the river, and I hear
Dalton, standing knee-deep in the river and dying of thirst. Kind of a religious song. I think this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot, and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our